Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
State player in for Steve Cochran this morning on 720 WGN. So big sports weekend ahead. Kicking off with some of the biggest college bowl games, like the Cotton Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the Sugar Bowl. And joining us to break it all down and the top stories in sports, Chicago sports of 2015, are my pals Andy Mazur and Sam Panionovich. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Sam, how you doing?
Andy, you made it back from Lincoln. I was worried. We saw the snow, and I thought, uh-oh, yeah, Sam, I hope he makes it back.
Sam and I were texting yesterday during the day. He says, am I going to get a call at 11 o'clock tomorrow night?
Sam was here. It looked like he was here for 24 hours straight when I came in here yesterday morning.
He's a hardworking young guy. Come on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sam, how are you today, buddy?
I'm good. It's funny. I was so tired when I responded to your email. You said, give me three bowls to talk about. I thought we were doing this New Year's Day, so I forgot the two big games, the Orange Bowl and of course, the Cotton Bowl. So we should probably talk about the Final Four, too, if we have time.
We will do that as well. But let's kick this off with the top three sports stories in Chicago for 2015. I think two are easily identified. One would be the Blackhawks championship season, taking the cup home once again.
Yeah, and it was something that I was actually to experience firsthand this time. You know, in 13, I had just started at the station, so I was in the studio most of the time. I was covering this playoff run, you know, firsthand for most of it. I was at all the home games and, you know, got to spend time on the ice after they won. It was just such a great ride. And, you know, to see the end of the Patrick Sharp era, you know, they traded Johnny Oduya. They made a lot of moves, you know, Antoine Vermette and Brad Richards and a lot of these guys. I think they got rid of eight or nine players.
Yeah.
But, you know, the accumulation of this team, winning their third Stanley Cup in six seasons, you know, Jonathan Tibbs on the ice with his mother, just embracing on the ice. You had Patrick Kane and his family and Corey Crawford and his family. And just, you know, you knew that there was going to be a big shakeup, but this team was able to put that sort of on the back burner and figure out a way to win their third cup in 6 years. And, you know, Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook and Nick Chalmerson and, I mean, just a great group of players and maybe one of the better coaches that we've seen in the last, I don't know, 30 years with Joel Quenneville. It's the perfect blend, the perfect group, and the willingness to, you know, put the team first and win that Stanley Cup. It was just an amazing ride.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, it was kind of personal, too, because in 2010 and 2013, I was living out of town, and I was the only person, I think, was living and breathing in Southern California that was supporting the Blackhawks. And I had to walk around the streets of San Diego with my Blackhawks jerseys on. And this year, I actually got to celebrate with some friends. We were at a local watering hole, and it was a great experience. And what Sam said, I mean, this is a special group of people and a special group of hockey players. Plus, you throw into the mix Quenneville and the assistant coaches and Stan Bowman and the job that he's done trying to put this thing back together again with the salary cap.
But the Hawks saying, you know, bidding farewell like Saad, Sharp, Oduya. It was hard seeing Sharpie with the Stars last week. It was tough watching him on the ice.
Yeah, especially when he knocked the goal stick out of Corey Crawford's hand.
Exactly. You don't want to see that stuff. Patrick Kane put an emotional offseason behind him and jumped out to one of the best starts of his career, earning at least a point in 26 consecutive games.
I mean, Sam, you saw most of that. I mean, it's just an amazing thing to think that this guy was able to do what he did going through what he did in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, right now he's got 53 points in, I think, 36 games. He is second in all of hockey with 22 goals. He's second in assists. He's got 31. And, I mean, we talked about this on the beat last week, Andy. I mean, when he's got the puck, you've got at least two or three sets of eyes on him. You know, everybody knows what he can do with the puck, yet he's still able to do what he wants to do. You know, defense is trying to throw the kitchen sink at him. And if you overload on Patrick Kane, he's going to find somebody wide open, whether it's Panarin or Anisimov or a sliding defenseman right at the net. I mean, he's so aware with the puck, so special. And he's really developed into a complete two-way player. It's not just offense anymore. He can take it away from you better than anybody, too.
But the NHL's leading scorer, you know, seeking to become the first U.S.-born player to win the Hart Trophy for league MVP and the Art Ross Trophy, awarded annually to the player who records the most points during the regular season. That's some pretty cool stuff right there.
It's cool, and I think, you know, just to kind of add on to what Sam was just saying, too, I mean, you think about what he went through, and now you think about the complete hockey player that he's become. I mean, it's showing a mature attitude, at least on the ice. Let's put it to you that way. I mean, he's kind of grown as a hockey player right before our eyes because, you know, originally he was all offense. It was showtime, and that was really all it was about. But now he's creating some of his opportunities by playing good two-way hockey.
He's really a terrific guy, too. We see him often in my neighborhood at the Gale Street Inn, a little rib joint on Milwaukee Avenue, and he's there. He's there with his parents, girlfriend, whatever it might be. And people are very respectful when he is there. Like, they don't come up to him, but they might give him a little wave. He always comes down, says hello to the kids and stuff while he's having a little dinner. But good guy, too. So I'm glad things have worked out for him. Second, I would say, would be the Cubs in the playoffs. 97 regular season wins and the third best record in baseball.
Nobody saw that one coming. I mean, I think people, and Sam, I think you'll agree with me, we've talked about this before as well, that, you know, maybe it was this year that was supposed to be the time that they kind of gelled and maybe made a run for the division title and got into the playoffs. And I just think that there was some beautiful ignorance, if you will, with these young players just not knowing any better, that they weren't supposed to do what they were doing last year. It does raise the bar quite a bit for the upcoming season, and the front office has tried to address some of the holes that were there. But I think any time you go to the playoffs and you beat the Cardinals and you're a Cub fan, I think life is good.
Yeah, if it wasn't for a guy named Daniel Murphy, they're probably in the World Series.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That guy had one of the most incredible playoff runs. I mean, he pretty much single-handedly slugged the Mets into the World Series. And that's something that I think, you know, you don't see very often. I mean, who knows who Daniel Murphy is, you know, before this season? But you look back at what the Cubs were able to accomplish. I mean, they won the Rookie of the Year award, the MVP, the Cy Young, the Manager of the Year. I mean, that was Arrieta and Bryant and Joe Maddon. And this was, you know, like Andy said, sort of ahead of schedule. Now you had Jason Hayward, you had John Lackey and Bet Zobrist. This team is actually well seasoned for, you know, being so relatively young. I mean, a lot of these guys were in the minor leagues in the last 1 or 2 years. So ahead of schedule, but now the narrative starts to change, Dave. Now they're expected to go farther. And, you know, you don't get slack. You know, if you go to the first round and you lose, then people are going to wonder, well, what the heck happened? Because you went to the NLCS last year. So now you have to play with pressure. And this is something that I don't think they've had to do in a long time on the north side, maybe back to 07, 08, when you're expected to win, expected to make the playoffs. Now these young, cuddly Cubs are expected to do more, and we'll see what happens.
Plus, we've got, you know, this new fan experience at the field, too. Mm-hmm. And, Andy, I know you send in a lot of pictures I see online all the time about what's happening. You know, if you've gone by Wrigley Field lately, the marquee is gone. The entire front looks...
The front door is wide open.
It's completely bizarre to see, but all the construction going on. But inside the field, you know, as much as I thought, okay, this Jumbotron dwarfs the original scoreboard, that bothered me a little bit. It does change, especially when you're bringing kids to a game. It does change the fan experience considerably.
Yeah, I was a little hesitant, a little worried about what they were going to actually do on that video board. I was not going to be okay with kiss cam, muscle cam, dance cam, those kind of stupid things that I see everywhere else. I think it's been tastefully integrated into the fabric of what it's like to watch a game at Wrigley.
What would be the number three sports story? And I know both of you have different opinions on this, Sam.
I would say it's the Bulls firing Tom Thibodeau to bring in Fred Hoiberg, because it's still something, and if you watched the game last night, you still are concerned about the decision. You look back and think, well, would this team be better with Tom Thibodeau? I think they would be. I think they'd be playing every night. You wouldn't be battling with inconsistency, but what's done is done. And, you know, a college coach, Fred Hoiberg, comes in and is still trying to learn his way with these professional players. He was called out by Jimmy Butler in his first season, 25 games in, that, you know, he wasn't doing things right and wasn't holding players accountable. So I think it's just fascinating. This whole Bulls thing has been really interesting to me, because you've got Derrick Rose, who can't stay on the floor. Joakim Noah is battling injuries. Jimmy Butler wants to be the leader, even though other players don't think he's the leader yet, which is, you know, so weird. There's so many interesting dynamics with this club. But, I mean, Tom Thibodeau took the Bulls to the playoffs 5 years in a row, and they cut him. I mean, they sent him away. They paid him not to coach. So, you know, for me, that's my third biggest story, even though it's probably not the most successful story. It's certainly one of the most interesting ones.
Big headlines. Andy?
I kind of went back and forth. I was debating between the Bears hiring John Fox because that meant there was no more Mark Trestman. I think that's a big story. But I kind of went deeper into the whole thing and thought about some of the guys that we lost this year, and that was Ernie Banks and Mitty Minoso. Pretty much, you know, the iconic figures of each of those franchises passed away in the same year. And it was very interesting to watch when the Cubs-Sox series was going on at Wrigley Field. All the Cubs players had the 69 jerseys on, with all of them wearing the number 14. And then when the series moved to U.S. Cellular Field, they all the White Sox players all wore number 9 for Mitty Minoso. So I thought that was a pretty big story this year.
Well, stick around. We're going to look at the bowl games today and through the weekend with Sam Panionovich and Andy Mazur after a look at your traffic trouble spots. Nothing like a little Frank Pellico to wake you up in the morning. It's Dave Flyer for that. Steve Cochran on 720 on WGN. And we're talking about the top Chicago sports stories of 2015 in a bowl game preview with Sam Panionovich and Andy Mazur. So 12 bowl games ahead before the national championships that are on Monday, January 11th, the final game. Today's the Chick-fil-A Bowl, Houston versus Florida State. We got the Orange Bowl coming up.
Yeah, and that's one of the national semifinal games with the new college football playoff system, and that's going to have Oklahoma, which is the number 4 team, against the number 1 Clemson. And the winner of that game and the winner of the Cotton Bowl between Michigan State and Alabama will meet in the desert in Glendale for the national championship on the 11th of January. So it's interesting. I mean, I really enjoy this time of the year with the fact that the college football the universities, the presidents, the ADs finally got together and realized that there was some, not only some money to be made for a playoff, but it was also kind of would draw fans and it would draw a lot more interest into
entertainment.
It, I think, you know?
Absolutely. Cotton Bowl Classic also tonight, and that's Michigan State versus Alabama.
Yeah, so that's the second semifinal matchup. So that's it's important. I mean, it's. That's an interesting matchup, too, because, you know, Michigan State and Alabama, there's some coaching history there between D'Antonio and Saban. And D'Antonio says that he's learned a lot from Nick Saban. And that'll be another interesting little sideline there. And Michigan State really earned its way there. I mean, they rolled through Iowa in the Big Ten championship game. Yeah, Iowa hadn't lost a game yet.
Sam, you're back on Outback Bowl is obviously tomorrow and on 720 WGN, Northwestern versus Tennessee.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, Dave, I should tell your listeners that you told me if I predicted any of these games wrong, I couldn't come back next year.
Yeah, that's
right. I've been crunching numbers pretty much all day.
Good work.
You know, this is interesting because, and I hope Dave Hennett's listening, he doesn't fire me, but, you know, Northwestern hasn't really played, you know, they missed a lot of the big boys in the Big Ten. They didn't play Ohio State. They didn't play Michigan State. And of the two big teams they did play, Michigan and Iowa, they lost by a combined 78-10. So, you know, I'm skeptical of their ability to play in big games. This team is still sort of ahead of schedule. You know, they have a freshman quarterback in Clayton Thorson. I believe a sophomore running back in Justin Jackson. The defense is good, but I'm worried about this offense, which has been a little anemic at times, playing against a team from the SEC that has a lot of speed. You know, Thorson has been a guy who's been able to take off and, you know, bust out 40, 50-yard runs. Don't think that happens against Tennessee. So they're going to have to find ways to bust out the trickery and see if Pat Fitzgerald can't dial up some good plays to kind of keep Tennessee off balance. It should be close. But whichever quarterback, whether it's Josh Dobbs for Tennessee or if it is Clayton Thorson for Northwestern, whichever one is able to make the big plays the second half, that team's probably going to win the game.
See, I was kind of thinking earlier in the game, and just to get your thought about this too, because I'm wondering if it wouldn't be better to get Thorson really involved early to try to get the confidence going, or if it would be more prudent to try to establish a good ground game against Tennessee's defense, kind of keep them on the field a long time, and then see what Thorson can do once they kind of wear him down.
Yeah, and I've also heard this angle that Northwestern feels a little snubbed, you know, that they felt like they should have been in the college football playoff. Like, both of these teams are going to try and win this football game. You know, when you get to New Year's Day, New Year's Eve, and beyond, these teams are all here for the same reasons. They're good football teams. They deserve to be here. And, you know, it's not like, you know, Northwestern or Tennessee. I don't think either team is going to lay an egg. So they're both motivated. You can't really use that card on either side. I do think, well, like I said, I think Tennessee is the stronger team on paper. You know, even though Northwestern is ranked higher, Tennessee is almost a 9-point favorite in Las Vegas. And that pretty much tells you everything you need to know about this game.
Exactly. Yeah. Then you got the Fiesta Bowl. You got Notre Dame versus Ohio State. The Rose Bowl, Stanford versus Iowa. It's going to be a big game tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, Iowa, the only loss they had, as I mentioned, was in the Big Ten championship game there against Michigan State. If it weren't for a 22-play drive at the end, you know, Iowa would be probably in the college bowl, the championship situation. But, you know, Stanford is that team, Sam, that Northwestern got in the first game of the year, and Stanford really kind of went on a roll from there. I mean, they kind of righted their ship and had it sailing in the right direction.
Yeah, the only loss that they had after Northwestern was the game against Oregon, after Oregon started to figure it out late this season. I actually watched the Big Ten Championship at the Plyer residence. So, you know, Dave, you and I both kind of saw Iowa try to bend but not break on that last. I think it was a 22-play drive that Michigan State put together to break the backs of Iowa. They're still one of the better defenses in the country. I just hope that, you know, the wind didn't completely come out of their sails, because oftentimes when you're undefeated and you have your eyes on the big prize and you do lose in that final game in sort of devastating fashion, you worry about the bounce back. So, you know, Stanford could certainly, you know, bust the doors off of Iowa in this one. I'm a little worried for the Big Ten, the Rose Bowl.
Then you got the Sugar Bowl, Oklahoma State versus Ole Miss on Saturday. You got Penn State versus Georgia in the Tax Slayer Bowl. You got Kansas State and Arkansas at the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. All these sponsorships. The Valero Alamo Bowl, Oregon versus TCU. The Motel 6 Cactus Bowl. That's a good one.
Yeah, there's so many bowls. Yeah. You know, one that we haven't really touched on yet, I think, is interesting. You've got Notre Dame against Ohio State.
Yeah.
And Urban Meyer with the Buckeyes. As a head coach, has always sort of figured out ways to get his team ready for bowl games. I mean, with Ohio State last year, they won the Sugar Bowl and then won the national championship. Actually, as a coach in his career in bowl games, he's 9-2, which is pretty good. So I think he'll have his team ready. But it's interesting because that team has sort of a divide in the locker room between quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So don't sleep on Notre Dame. Notre Dame is certainly an upset special for a lot of smart people. I think the Irish keep it really, really close.
All right, and then we've got the finals coming up, obviously, too, in the college football playoff national championship, and that's going to be in Glendale, Arizona on January 11th. So we'll see what happens there.
Andy, who do you got winning it all? I think it's going to be Oklahoma and Alabama, and I think big game Bob Stoops wins his national championship. I think the Sooners are going to take it all.
Yeah, see, I had Michigan State getting the upset against Alabama and then Oklahoma. I thought Oklahoma was playing the best football probably of any of those teams coming toward the end. Well, maybe with the exception of Michigan State. I'd love to see that championship game, but I do agree with you. I think Oklahoma's going to win it all.
Oh, that means it's not going to happen.
That means it's
not going to happen.
You know what that means? That means Clemson's going to win the title.
Pretty much.
All right, pull out your crystal balls. I want to see where you think we're going to be with the Hawks and the Cubs this year. How are we going to end the season? How are we going to kick this off on both teams? Andy?
I think the Cubs will probably, you know, they're going to win the division, I think, this year. I think they've weakened themselves. They've weakened the Cardinals just by getting Lackey and Hayward. I think they'll win the division. I don't really have a good feel yet for how far they will go in the playoffs. And I think the Hawks are just kind of coasting right now and getting ready to fire it up come February and March. And that's a team, as Sam and I discussed the other day, you don't want to play them at that time of the year because they figure out a way to get things done.
They do. Sam?
I think they both make the playoffs, and for all the vitriol thrown the Hawks' way for, you know, being in third place in the Central, fourth place in the West, this team is primed. I mean, why can't they go to the Western Conference Final again with that roster? And the hockey's like roulette, Dave. Look at the numbers they have, 19, 88, 81. They've got 2 and 7 and 50 and 86 and 65. They can go to the Western Conference Final, and when they get there, who knows?
Well, again, the Outback Bowl is on tomorrow at 10, Northwestern, here on 720 WGN with Dave Ennett. And happy New Year to you both.
Right back
you
at
too,
you.
Dave.
All right. Thanks, gents. News is next, 720 WGN.